Hello everyone and welcome to Táncsász Talk, the world's only English language program focusing primarily on Hungarian folk music. I am Kálmán Magyar Öcsi speaking from Toronto, Canada. Episodes of Táncsász Talk, which combine a mix of music and stories delivered by yours truly, are available as always on táncsász.com, that's T-A-N-C-H-A-Z.com, or on YouTube. Just search Táncsász Talk and subscribe so you don't miss anything. Today we have an episode of Táncsász Talk Interviews. This is where I delve into long-form discussions with a wide array of guests. Episodes of Táncsász Talk Interviews are available on all popular podcast platforms, including Apple, Google, and Spotify podcast stores. Make sure you subscribe and leave a nice review if you like what you hear. Today, I am excited to have on the program the legendary Raif Hizaini. Raif Hizaini was born in 1967 in the city of Mitrovica in the Republic of Kosovo. Although Raif was born in Kosovo, like the overwhelming majority of people from Kosovo, he is Albanian descent. We don't do politics here on Táncsász Talks, but Kosovo is a bit of a complex topic and worthy of a very quick history lesson, which is going to be relevant to this interview. When Raif was growing up, Kosovo was an autonomous region within Serbia. And of course, Serbia was part of Yugoslavia until Yugoslavia broke up during the 1990s. The breakup of Yugoslavia was followed by several famously turbulent years during which Kosovo remained a part of Serbia-Montenegro. You might recall that the United Nations was very hands-on trying to keep the peace between the Serbians and the Albanians in Kosovo, the big dispute between them being the importance of Kosovo's land to the history of both Serbians and Albanians. Now, Kosovo eventually declared independence from Serbia in 2008. So Kosovo is now its own country, though some countries haven't recognized Kosovo as an independent nation, most notably Serbia and Russia. Hungary, by the way, has recognized Kosovo's independence. So in case you don't have an access to a map while you're listening to this, to the south of Hungary, you'll find Serbia, and to the south of Serbia is Kosovo, and to the south of Kosovo is neighboring Albania. Now, that's very generally speaking, because actually it's not quite south of each other, but generally, just so you get a sense of that geography. So here's a takeaway. When you hear about the Albanians from Kosovo, like Raif, they have a bit of a shared fate and similar challenges as the Hungarians living in Transylvania, just to kind of make it more relevant to the program. Albanians and Hungarians, by the way, are sort of kindred spirits. Their relationship goes back all the way to the Middle Ages. They help protect each other. They have shared enemies, most notably in the form of the Ottoman Empire. And a more recent tidbit is that in 1938, the King of Albania, King Zag I, married a Hungarian, Geraldine Aponyi de Nagy Apony. Ooh, it's a fancy name. So the Queen of Albania was Hungarian. Of course, one big difference between the Albanians and the Hungarians is religious. The majority religion in Albania is Islam, whereas in Hungary it is Catholic. Okay, no more history. Let's continue on with Raif, but his life will fit into this history interestingly. Raif attended elementary school in Mitrovica, where he was born in Kosovo, and started to play the accordion when he was in fourth grade. He attended formal classical music conservatory during high school, but he was really attracted early on to folk music. He started to play with a few folk bands, and while in high school, he was already touring around Europe, Germany, Austria, and all over Yugoslavia. For university, he was accepted into the prestigious Academy of Performing Arts at the University of Kosovo in Pristina. Pristina, of course, is the capital of Kosovo. And that's when he started also performing with the Albanian National Radio and TV Orchestra in Pristina. Raif really hit the big time when he started to play with a young group called Besniket. He's going to probably correct my pronunciation, but they're kind of like the Backstreet Boys in the Albanian folk music world. They were popular on radio, TV, and toured all over the world. And in fact, when he was a third-year university student, Raif and his band, Bezniket, were hired to perform for a six-month engagement in New Jersey at a restaurant in North Bergen. Now, that was in 1989, and this is where the earlier history lesson I talked about kicks in, because when Raul Raif was touring in New Jersey, that's when the Yugoslav government started cracking down in Kosovo. The government started to shut down academic and other institutions in Kosovo, including Raif's music university, the Academy. So when Raif returned to Kosovo in 1990 after that tour, there wasn't much left for him to return to. So a few months later, he picked up and went back to New Jersey. And that's when Raif met the famous Albanian singer Merita Halili, who was touring in New York for a few months at that time. They fell in love, and together they moved back to Europe, lived in Albania for a few years. But when things got really bad financially in Albania and really bad politically in Kosovo, they decided to move to New Jersey in 1995. So that was 25 years ago. Raif finally made it back to university, studying music, getting his bachelor's degree in music from Caldwell College in New Jersey, and received a master's in music from Montclair State University in New Jersey. He is now an adjunct professor at Montclair State University and teaches music also at Bergen Arts and Science Charter High School in Garfield, New Jersey. Raif's wife, Merita Halili, is a very in-demand singing teacher together and singer, obviously. They have performed all over the world. Some of the more notable venues: John F. Kennedy Center in Washington, Lincoln Center in New York, the Barbican Center in London, and many other places in the U.S., Canada, Europe, Australia, and Asia. Wherever there are Albanians in the world, Raif and Merita have been there and performed for them. I met Raif in the early 2000s through the Balkan music scene in the New York City area, having been introduced to him by our good common friend Steve Katansky, who I've previously interviewed on Tanzas Talk. Since then, Raif and I have played many gigs together, we've recorded together, and we've become very good friends, even though nowadays, unfortunately, we very rarely meet, particularly during COVID. Raif and Merita have three beautiful daughters: Maggie, Angie, and Rhea. Before I bring him on, just to really underscore what a big deal Raif and his wife Merita are, if you ever meet an Albanian anywhere, ask them if they know Merita Halili, and they will probably answer yes. She is a household name in Albania, but you know, she couldn't have sustained this without Raif, who was her accordionist and band leader. It's a bit ironic, in my view, that due to financial and political circumstances, two of the greatest figures in the Albanian music world live outside of Albania. But as they say, New Jersey is the cradle of civilization, so that's where they ended up. By the way, it's not really unique in the Balkan folk music world to have great artists living abroad. For instance, the top Bulgarian saxophonist Yuri Yunakov and the top Macedonian clarinetist Ismail Lumanovsky both live in the New York area, just to name two of them. There are many more. It's unfortunately a byproduct of the political and financial circumstances of that part of the world. Raif is probably the most famous Albanian accordionist in the world, and in my eyes, beyond that, he's one of the best musicians and the best people I have ever played with. I call him my brother. I'm very pleased to welcome my dear friend to the program, brother Raif Hizaini, calling in from Clifton, New Jersey. Hello, Raif.
Yola pot kusunum seifen o mekivot.
Oh, mekivasht. Very nice.
Mekivasht.
Yeah. Raif, sorry about the long introduction, but you know, you deserve it, in my view. It's so nice to talk to you again.
Well, I know you're a great musician and a great lawyer, but I didn't know that you're a great historian as well.
Well, Wikipedia is a wonderful resource. So, but I.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Well, it's nice to reconnect. You know, I this is a program that's dedicated primarily to Hungarian folk music, but we do tend to veer off and talk about some of the neighboring countries. And also people and personalities like yourself. Do you remember the first time you were exposed to Hungarian, you know, the village folk music?
Oh, yes. First of all, thank you very much for having me. And I do follow your episodes since you started. And I think this is a wonderful thing you're doing, not just for the Hungarian community and Hungarian-speaking people and all these who love Hungarian folk music, but as well as for those who are not Hungarian. So I learned a lot, and I do enjoy your episodes. And actually, I will ask you not to stop, even if the COVID passes by. I hope so.
Yeah.
Keep doing it, because you are great on this. You are a multi-talented person, multi-talented brother. So that makes me very happy.
Thank you, Raif. I do plan on continuing uh-huh. with it, no matter what anybody says.
Exactly,
but I appreciate the kind words.
Well, the first time I was exposed to the Hungarian lovely music, which I love it, it was around 1980s, live music. At that time, as you mentioned, Kosovo was part of former Yugoslavia. And there was a festival in different cities around former Yugoslavia. And my hometown, Mitrovica, used to be a very well-known town that there were great musicians, mm-hmm. not just folk musicians, but even a jazz musician. And they will organize the city, and the province will organize the festival of, and that festival will participate different folk groups from Slovenia, Croatia, Bosnia and Herzegovina, Vojvodina, mm-hmm. especially with a minority of people that live that, like Hungarians,
yeah.
and Macedonia and Serbia and Montenegro as well.
Right.
So that was the first time I saw a live band, a village band, and a dancer. So they were dancing. And it was very attractive to me because the mode and the way how they treat the music, it's like, you know, like it's very, very, it was very attached to me. You know, mm-hmm. I love it. You know, so, and still, I don't love any kind of music, but since where is your relationship to those people from that country, you get more interested into it. Like you said in the past, according to the history, the relationship between Hungarians and Albanians, it started not just since we met, me and you, mm-hmm. but it started a long time ago, and especially during the 18th, 19th century or 20th century, when King Zag married a Hungarian noble lady from Hungary,
yeah.
Queen Geraldina.
Yes,
so
that's right.
It's kind of back and forth, that relationship, and still, I don't know how would I explain that, but it's just a pure and sincere Hungarian-Albanian relationship.
Yeah, I sense that too. Raif, by the way, I think you may have a headset on or something. Your mic may be hitting something.
I'm sorry about that.
Yeah,
yes,
that's okay.
Yes, okay.
That's okay.
Good.
So, you know, Yugoslavia in many ways was a very interesting project or interesting undertaking in terms of the putting all those different nationalities and some that might not generally get along together, but it, you know, it did, I guess, introduce you and expose you to all kinds of music and dance and people within that one big country. That must have been quite interesting to grow up in that atmosphere.
Yeah, indeed, it was like as you mentioned, we had a different ensembles.
Mm-hmm.
We had just one professional ensemble, which still today does a great job. The name is Chota, Chota,
mm-hmm.
and it's a professional ensemble. And back then, they used to dance any kind of dances that from former Yugoslavia, including and Hungarian dances, mm-hmm. like different dances from a village and chardars and all uh-huh. these different dances from Slovenia, Croatia, Bosnia, Macedonia, even Bulgaria,
mm-hmm.
and it was as you said, it was kind of a multinational state,
mm-hmm.
like exactly as Europe is trying to do now.
Mm-hmm.
Europe is now like a mini former Yugoslavia, and the benefit of that of these festivals was very good, very high, because you had chance to meet those musicians And if not at that time, you didn't have a YouTube or all the social media when you can go and search for Hungarian music. So let's say if you want to hear that, you have to go to the library or have or radio station and ask permission to get to an archive and listen to that music. It wasn't like a very commercial in the sense that it wasn't accessible like we have access today for any kind of music. So those festivals, to me, they were very important for me as a musician, as a musician, and as well as for the other, I mean, other people who were not musicians, because they had chance to see a different culture from different backgrounds and different regions where people lived in former Yugoslavia.
What struck you about the Hungarian music? You know, maybe as a musician, tonally, instrumentation wise. I mean, I presume this was the a village type of setup with the, you know, the violin and the contra and the double bass, maybe a cimbalom. What was your impression hearing these guys? I think you mentioned they were from Vojvodina, so these Hungarians from there. What kind of do you remember? And even since then, what do you think in generally about Hungarian folk music, especially as compared with your own?
Well, first of all, I mean, the customs, the way how they dance, you know, and as a music, I love upbeat music and was very happy, of course. Most of the music was 2-4, and the technique, how the especially violinists play, which I play accordion, and of course, without trying to put down any different instrument, but I'm not tuba player to hold one note, boom, 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 boom. So I would love, I love challenges. So the dances like charters, you know, as you know, yeah, have a different kind of wonderful charters dance and musical pieces and compositions that are very challenging for violinist player and of course for accordion too. So I like more like a 16th note, even 32, instead of, you know, like if I compare with a different folk music, that was very attractive to me. I mean, I couldn't wait just to go next to the band because there were like thousands of people around the stage. And I was like at that time, 1980, I was more 67.
Yeah.
I don't know. So I would sneak in and go next to the band and just, I want to feel that that groove, that momentum.
Yeah.
So the lively music, the welcome of the warmth of the music, and it's, they never stopped, you know, like.
Yeah.
So that was the first, like, that catches me, my heart and my ear and my eye. And so I fell in love with the Hungarian music, of course, and others too, but especially with the Hungarian music, because first time I saw cymbalum, live cymbalum, and I knew what is cymbalum, but I never saw it, you know, so it's a big difference.
Right, right. Had you been a violinist, perhaps you even would have picked up that music. Of course, the accordion is more or less a accompaniment instrument in Hungarian music. But yeah, I know the 16th notes and all the challenging runs. Although you definitely have that in Albanian and the Kosovar music, but this was I'm sure is a very interesting thing to hear first, you know, out of the blue, because it's very different than your music. And in fact, I wanted to play a little clip. Today I'm going to play some clips, do something new, just because we're talking about music that some of my listeners, usual listeners, might not know of. So I'm going to play a short clip of your wife, Merita, singing. This is traditional Albanian music. And let me play a little, and then we'll kind of talk some more about it, okay?
Okay. Oh,
So that's a clip. I don't. That must have been a long time ago. Looks like at some big festival, right, Raif?
Yeah, this was a national festival which was held in Albania every 5 years in south of Albania in a city called Gjirokastra.
Okay.
And it was like, I think, a 4-day festival, if I'm not wrong. And this was in 1988.
Oh, okay.
But this was happening in Albania, so I wasn't able, not just me, but all Albanians, they were not able to go into the Albania because of the communist system they had at that time.
Right.
But what is the importance of this festival is that in order to get in, to participate as a performer in this festival, you must be really, really talented person.
Mm-hmm.
It didn't work like just, you know, through the connection and stuff like that.
Right.
Because the educational system at that time in Albania and like requirements, they did require you have to be good or you cannot get in. So this is Rita's second debut in this national festival.
Right.
And it's a pure Albanian folk festival where people from north, south, and east and west of Albania. Now, since the fall of communism, now it's a good thing that all Albanians who live out of Albania, like Albanians in Serbia, like in Preševo, Bujanovac, and Medveđa, and Kosovo, and Macedonia, and Montenegro, now they do participate. Now the festival becomes even much bigger and much more rich because those Albanians from Kosovo, let's say Albanians from Mitrovica, they bring the folk tradition and music and dance into the Gjirokastra. So especially it's important now because the young generation, they are very interested in it. So
interestingly, the band setup is quite traditional. I hear violins, clarinet, the drum. What's that drum called?
Frame drum.
And then is it a saz or bouzouki or what do you guys call it?
It's a lauto.
Lauto. Okay, call it Hungarian a koboz. But it's bigger.
Yes.
It's bigger than we play in the Moldvoy music. In Moldavian music, we play that. This is bigger. So that's really the authentic setup. No bass guitar, no accordion, no drum set, right? This is, at least from where the region this is from, that's the traditional setup, right?
Yeah, that's the traditional setup from the middle of Albania. Because Albanian music, like Hungarian and other musics around the world it's very rich.
Mm-hmm.
Like that's a setup for the middle of Albania, which is considered to be, as you said, the cradle of the great singers. This is my personal opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe some people they do not agree, but I will say, like, if you are able to sing music from middle of Albania, then you are able to sing anything you want in the world.
Mm-hmm.
In the sense that there are songs that needs a special technique and songs that the range could be to 1.5 octave. I'm talking about folk song, not composed song.
Right.
So that was a setup, a typical setup from middle of Albania.
Mm-hmm.
An accordion in the middle of Albania came in late 1930s. And we have a different setups, like from the north, which is a Çifteli with two strings, and Sharki with five strings, and Laut, one string only, and different percussions, and different like kavals, and bagpipes, and tapan.
Right.
Because we cannot say a tapan is Albanian. Tapan, it's tapan. Nobody knows where it comes from, because everybody uses tapan.
Right.
Or a bagpipe. I know Irish people, Scottish, and even Gaelic people, they use it. It's a kind of universal instrument.
Right.
And, so that will be the setup for that.
The tapan comes from Tappan Zee Bridge, no? Yeah. So
yeah. You have to pay the toll now. So I have to pay the toll to see Steve.
What's the toll on the Tappan Zee Bridge? It's like $23 to cross now or something?
I didn't know. I forgot. I have an easy pass. I never pay attention to it. So it costs me money to go and visit Steve Katansky and Susan Katansky.
Yeah. Yeah, if they cross the Tappan Zee Bridge. So Raif, I know there are various regions. You talk about central Albania, and then of course the regions where Albanians live outside of Albania, and I want to focus on Kosovo, because we have this interesting thing with Hungarian music. Is really the rich Hungarian folk music, in terms of the differences between the sounds and all that, that really exists in Transylvania, which is in today's Romanian border. And some of that is geographical, obviously, you know, hills and waterways, they kind of protect villages and they keep them segregated. So their culture survives longer. But also there's a political thing going on where if you're from Transylvania, at least for the last 100 years, you have fought tooth and nail to keep your culture alive, to make sure it doesn't disappear. Do you guys have that type of mentality within Kosovo? And is that something that you can hear through the music or see through the dancing that survived?
Well, this is a great question, and it's a very relevant to what you just said with the Transylvania and Hungarians who live in Romania. And this has become a big issue, not just among Hungarians in Romania, and especially Hungarians in Vojvodina, which they did try to kind of separate from Serbia.
Yeah.
But we as an Albanian, we did our part. And it is kind of frustrating when you are under occupation and still you're trying to survive your identity, you want to be yourself with the good and bad, whatever you have. And this was a kind of very stressful. I do remember myself when I was a young, you know, musician in high school, even if we would go in the festival, let's say in Budapest. Mm-hmm. There was a jury that they will go through the lyrics and see if there is anything in the lyrics that it's against the former Yugoslavia. You know, yeah. So it was kind of, you know, like you have to be very, at that time, you have to be very careful. And if there is any song against Tito or against the communists in former Yugoslavia, I'm very sure that you had the same experience in the Hungary back then. So surviving as a musician and keeping those dances, even though the influence was at that time in TV and radio, we were allowed, of course, to play our national music, of course. Mm-hmm. But anything that you will say or oversay, even in lyrics, and sing about Kosovo and being free or stuff like that, you'll have those security guys coming after you. Because I have my friends, luckily I was not a singer, but I was in the ads to be arrested, even though I was arrested once. But I have a friend of mine, he was arrested just because he sings something against Yugoslavia and against Tito. Hmm. And not just one, but maybe, I don't want to say 100 of them, but
right.
Maybe 50, 60 musicians and singers, they were arrested. They were mistreated. So it's very important. It's very important for Hungarians in Romania to keep their traditional music. And that I would love to hear from them, in the sense that no matter what goes with the politics, nobody till today was able to change or to assimilate the entire nation.
Right.
No matter how big the occupator or how big those guys are, how powerful, nobody, the history taught us that nobody was able to assimilate a nation.
Right.
So to me, it's music is very important for the nation, and that's how we have to educate our children. And when I say our children, I'm talking about the young generation, so they can learn a lesson from the past. So that should never happen again to anybody around the world, because you're just sinning. You just, I cannot imagine myself a musician, a dancer, and a performer, and thinking something bad. That's ridiculous. You know, let them be. Let them sing whatever their heart wants to sing.
Yeah, yeah, for sure. Well, and just to kind of seal up that question, do you, in terms of how the Kosovo, as an example, music has survived or has been preserved, is it a bit of a difference than the way Albanian, in Albania proper, was preserved? There's that fight or that urge to preserve against the occupation? Is that something that survives through the way the dance and the music has survived?
Yeah, this is a great point. Well, it did survive and still today survives. But in Albania, it was much more easy because it was a country, you know, yes, recognized by UN, but all countries around the world. While in Kosovo, even though we had those small festivals, national Albanian festivals, but there was a limit what you can do in those festivals. Let's say if there was a song, a patriotic song, that has to be sung, you have to change all, not all, but predominantly most of the words, because it will go against that country. And today, new generation, what they do preserving Albanian music in Kosovo and in Albania. Now we have all this professional, you know, institution, that institution for the musicology, yeah, and different archives. But what they do, the young generation, by the way, in Kosovo, in that region, there are famous singers, even they sing in Albania, in Albanian language. They become so popular in Balkans because of their tune, and they are very good in R&B and hip-hop. So yeah, so what they do, let's say they compose a hip-hop song or R&B or rap, and they do in the background of that song a very old traditional melody or even original singer that sung, like saying 60 or 100 years ago. Mm-hmm. So they blend together that tradition with a new style of music, like R&B, rap, right, hip-hop, and yes.
Yeah, and we're going to get to a little more contemporary sound in a couple of minutes. It's interesting, Raif, you know, just like the Hungarian and Transylvanian experience, you know, when it's about your survival and the survival of your nation and your people, you know, people will work really hard in ensuring that they keep up the tradition and they preserve it and pass it to the next generation. Once it's not so hard to do that, like now, once it becomes easier, then it's really up to the educational institutions and the cultural institutions and the government really to do that. And they're doing it, thank God. And, you know, I've interviewed previous episodes, you know, Mark Marchik talking about Ukrainian, and that stuff, that work is going on there. And Mateusz Atinkowski talks about Poland, and we've talked to Walt Mohovlich as well about Serbia and Croatia. So we have some very good work going on now by educational and academic institutions to preserve that for us. And thank God that they're doing that.
Yeah.
Raif, what about just, you know, because it's the show is Tanzhas Talk, so I want to ask a little bit about the music before we play another clip and talk some more about the music. But in terms of the dancing, what's the dancing in general like, particularly in comparison to the Hungarian dancing? So what do you see in terms of Albanian and Kosovar dancing? And is there couples dancing at all?
Yeah, of course. Dancing is very important in Albanian culture, like in every other culture. Of course, and you have different dances, but I will try to kind of make a kind of a very small map, verbal small map, in the sense that, let's start from the Kosovo. Most famous dancers are in Kosovo. It's around the border in between the west-south of Kosovo and Macedonia and Serbia. Mm-hmm. And those are great dancers. They have dances like great dancers and dances like but the time signature are 6-8, 7-8, 9-8, 12-8, 24-16.
24-16. Wait a second. I have to add the. I forgot to carry the one. Sorry. Yeah. Jesus. Yeah. 24-16.
They have all this kind of different odd meters, as you know. Yeah. And if you go a little bit more, like south, because in Macedonia, like there is 35-40% of population are Albanians that live in Macedonia. And they predominantly they live in the western Macedonia.
Okay.
And the south by Lake Ohrid and Bitola Monastery. You played that song, Bitola.
Yeah, Bitola.
And as you know, the dancers are they are great dancers. Even I mean Albanians and Macedonians as well, because in former Yugoslavia, they used to say, like, if you go through Bosnia, don't say to yourself that you are a singer, because everybody sings. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, yes, yeah.
You know,
everybody sings better than you. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So they said, if you go through Macedonia, don't call yourself you are a dancer.
Oh.
You know, because everybody dance. You know, everybody dances. And if you pass by Serbia, don't say that you play accordion. You know what I'm saying?
Okay, right.
Because everybody plays accordion. So there are different, you know, fables about different nationalities. And if you go on the west, which is in border of North Albania and Montenegro, there are quite a little bit less dances. Because I do understand why, because it's the mountain region, you know, and obviously where is the mountain region, how you can dance, you know, even though the Montenegrins, they have a great dance when a few other dancers, they stand in the shoulders of the dancers, so it becomes like a castle.
Like a castle, you know? Cool, yeah.
So if you and we have like in the region of Rugova, which is in border with the Montenegro and Kosovo, the famous dance of Rugova, which we played it together in the past, but we forgot.
Yeah, we
played it together.
Okay.
And then if you go from north, because the north of Albania, in the border with Kosovo, it's a mountain region, very mountain region. Mm-hmm. And if you go down by middle of Albania, you see even the dances are much more, I will not say easy, but more flexible in the sense that it's the region, I mean, the relief of the geographic place is much more, you know, like with the fields and stuff like that, people are much more calm.
Yes.
And then it goes south of Albania, which is Piri or Janina, which is, now, you know, Christos Govetas.
Yes. Yeah.
Yeah. So we had all this conversation over and over. He says, no, this is Greek song. This is, no, this is Albanian. So I don't want to get into that, but Christos knows exactly what I'm talking about.
Yes.
So there's a common tones that, of course, when it's something good, everybody wants to take part of that, you know, beauty. But yeah, the dance is a very important part of to all of us, and of course, and especially, you know, during the wedding. I mean, for the wedding, and you know, dance, it's very important.
And these are mainly line dances, right? Like kolo style dances.
Yeah, you have mainly line dances. Okay. And also you have separate dances in the sense, like just a pair.
Yeah.
So it depends from the region.
And but there's nothing like the chardash, where a man and woman dance. Yes.
No.
Okay, and that makes sense because that's from the Renaissance age. That's a newer style.
Yes.
And you guys were never quite got down there in terms of the because of the the Ottoman occupation and the like. So,
of course.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, it's interesting, Raif, and I want everybody to hear about that. Hear what you're saying because. It's just influenced, just like with Hungarian and Transylvanian, by geography, by who your neighbor is, and topography. You know, it's your flatlands or mountainous lands, and some politics mixed in there too. So it's very interesting for me to hear that, Raif. So let me play another clip, and this is you and Marita performing together. You're leading a band. This is televised in Albania. I think a few years ago now, well, probably around 10 years ago. And let's listen to it's a mix. It's now a mix of the traditional with a little more contemporary sound. And this is what I really hear more or less for Albanian music. And this is what we want to talk about, how it got to this point. But let's listen to Marita sing and a little solo follow on by you. Oh, it's my man, Raif. Opa. Listen to this. Simple. More is less. Less is more, folks. Yes. Nice. Very nice. I know it's a little short solo, but it's beautiful. So now we have a little more, I would say, contemporary sound. We have, obviously, the accordion is in there. But we have a drum set, bass guitar, all that stuff. So you know, this is very prevalent. This sound, the first clip we heard was much more authentic, or I must say authentic. I don't like that word, but much more rooted in the village music. How did we get here? What's the progression of the music to get to this? Because this is now, I would say, it's folk, but maybe folk pop or contemporary folk. Why don't you talk about that a bit?
Well, yeah. The first clip you played, it was a traditional urban music from the city that Marita sing with a violin and lute and frame drum and clarinet. Yeah. And now, that song that Marita sung in 1988 was sung even before, like 60, 70 years, exactly the same.
Okay.
Even the second song that you played when I had my small solo, it's a folk song from city of Tirana. And it's exactly played with the same instruments as you saw that clip. But modernization of the life and music and lifestyle, it brings, has an influence on the music as well. Technology and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
So before people, they used to listen to the music, when you hire a band, when somebody sing, they didn't have, let's say back then, I'm talking about 7 years ago or 6 years ago, they didn't have the same sound system. So everybody was quiet. So they were so hungry and eager to hear that music. So, thanks to technology, you have a sound system, and people, they brought up different instruments that didn't belong, let's say, to the Albanian culture or mm-hmm. other cultures,
mm-hmm.
like a bass guitar, a drum set, and they were different talented musicians that they wanted to be challenged by learning different instruments. I'm talking about folk music. So they kind of substitute those frame drum players. They went to the drum set, and those Lauta player, one of them, they went to a bass guitar. So it sounded much more, of course, much more. It's still its folk. You can hear Marita singing folk and introduction is everything. The refrain is folk, everything, but just a different, different. If I can say modernized instruments like a keyboard or a electric drum set. Other than that, everything else is just typical Albanian. And of course, they use like a more written music in the sense of the harmony and the chord progression and stuff like that. So, and it becomes like by doing this, they change accidentally, becomes the unique style, not just in Albania, but in all Balkans.
Yes.
Even, yeah, so accidentally, if I could say, by using this, not using the typical instruments, how everybody used to use like 100 years ago or even 60 years ago, now we become the same. Like
Right. Well, this is a very interesting point, and it's a distinction, really, between the Hungarian culture and music and everything to the south of it, and even in Romania, because you've used these contemporary instruments. We don't have this in Hungary. Like, if you try to play Hungarian folk music with that instrumentation, it's just not it's not folk music anymore. They call it like world music or fusion or whatever. But but what you guys are playing is still unmistakably folk music, and it's just on more contemporary instruments. You keep the old instruments, but also add to it the more contemporary. But that is why, you know, everybody knows who you guys are around the world, because it's become mainstream. People are more able to listen to Led Zeppelin or the Beatles or Elvis Presley and then say, and this sounds a lot like it, except this is our music. Whereas if you listen to, you know, the pop music and then you listen to Hungarian folk music, you could tell the difference, you know, right away.
Yep.
Now, it's neither bad nor good. It's just very different Hungarian folk music really is niche and not really well known to the general population, unlike your folk music is. And I think it's due to the instrumentation, right?
Yeah, I think I do agree with you. And actually, the only that in how much I saw and how much I did follow so far, not regular basis, but in general, I didn't see Hungarian music that it's the same level as other Balkan music by using contemporary instruments.
Yeah.
I don't know if that is good or bad. I will say it's good, but because it's a pure music, and still we have those national ensembles who keep that tradition. You know that those are the only one, but even the most famous village singers in Kosovo and in Albania, like very rural, you know, places. Today, he could be like an 8 years old man, great man, great singer, very famous. And he sings with the rhythm machine, with the drum set, electric drum set.
Uh-huh.
No more pure as he used to sing, let's say, with the Chifteli or just a frame drum or tapan, because he wants to adjust the lifestyle, the music lifestyle, if I can say it like that.
Yeah.
Know what I'm saying? So, in other hand, it's kind of risky because everybody becomes the same. The only difference is just the language.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
And the harmony, they start trying to, they have almost the same same chord progression, same harmony. Mm-hmm. That doesn't make a difference from another country to the other, which does the beauty, because Hungarian music is so beautiful because it's different.
Well, it's pure. In this, and you're right.
Of course.
And we've and we talk a lot about it on this program with various interviews and also my Music and Stories episodes, where, you know, we had the luck of Bartók and Kodály starting from the 20s and the 30s and collecting music, and then going all the way to the Táncház movement in the 70s. And you know, once we start adding drum sets and bass guitars to it, it's great music, but it's just not at all, you can't really call that folk music. And again, it's just an interesting distinction. And even Merita's voice, there is, you know, obviously a folk approach to it, but it's unmistakably rooted in, you know, I would say classical training. There's vibrato, you know, are generally the singers, the Albanian, I'll call them folk singers, do they have the similar vibrato approach? Because you've heard Hungarian folk singing, where it's much more more like Croatian, like, you know, just much more kind of belting out, much more flat in terms of no vibrato. What's the, and even when she sang the first clip with that traditional setup of the background instrumentation, she still was using that vibrato technique. Is that just how people sing, or what's the story there?
Well, I hope you will have another time, Marita, an interview, and she will talk more about this. But I'm very sure that singing Albanian music, it's quite different from the region where she or where the singer came from. You know what I'm saying? Because if you go on the north of Albania, it's a little bit different way of singing. If you compare that with the Macedonia, Albanians who live in Macedonia, and Albanians who live in South Greece, which is polyphony, Iso. So it depends from the region. But as I said, as a singer, you know, if you are able to sing from middle of Albania, you are able to sing music from north of Albania, south, west, and east. Ornaments and trills of Garita's songs are so rich and so full, because there was like, as you know, we are in the middle of the kind of south, southeast of Europe, and there was always a crossroad for all these empires, starting from the Roman Empire, Byzantium, and Ottoman Empire, and the Slavs who came from Carpathians, and south from Greece. So I guess everybody had the influence on this music, not just in Albanian music, but in music in general in all Balkans, including maybe even in Hungarian music sometimes somewhere.
Absolutely. Yeah,
it's hard to distinguish that this is that, but I'm very sure that there is a big difference between the ornaments and singing, the way singing style from north to south, east and west, and from middle of Albania. Even if we go back to like a second century, I'm not sure, second or fourth century, Ian Kukuzel is a composer that he contributed to the music system in the staff.
Okay.
And he was born in Durrës, which is a city in Albania. But in music theory, in Western music theory, he's known just a little bit. But he had a very great contribution. So when I did my album, one of my former professors, and he was doing research on his, that if you hear the Mekam like a Hijaz scale, or if you hear the major third, And he used that back then, but to us, like when I say to us, to me and to you, when we hear that, we think, oh, this is Arabic music.
Yeah, Arabic, yeah.
Actually, it was not, because Jan Kukuzel used it that because he was a priest and he was a scholar for music. Going back to your question, yeah, the trills depends from what region you're coming from.
And you will approach that, Raif, when you play, you have the same, you will respect the ornamentation and style of each region that you're playing from, correct?
Of course, yes. Of course.
Now, is that something that you listen to village musicians come up through the years, like just like we would listen to authentic field recordings, original field recordings, and is this something that's taught in the music school that you attended? How is this the tradition of each region? This is how you trail, this is how you ornament, this is the passing tone, this is the glissando. Oh, you don't do that here, you do this, this is the interlude you play. How is that given from generation to generation within the Albanian world, music world?
Well, I think this was mainly was by recording. The people that recorded, so they kind of they kept that tradition by listening to that music. Mm-hmm. And late 60s, they started writing those ornaments. But I was lucky and honored to play, actually, the first chardash that somebody played in my ear. It was played by Maestro Isaac. His name is Isaac Muccelli.
Yes.
He was a band leader. I told you about him.
Yeah.
I loved him so much. And he was such a great musician and band leader. And he played first chardash for me back in 1983, 84, I think, 85. I don't know. I don't remember. Mm-hmm. So I learned a lot from him. So he taught me every single detail and ornament from every region where Albanians lived in Balkans at that time, because he had chance to go to Albania and tour in Albania during that regime. Mm. But it was officially between former Yugoslavia and Albania, so everything was legal. So he wouldn't be persecuted. You know what I'm saying?
Yes, for sure.
So I learned a lot from him. Mm. And of course, I learned a lot from... I was always lucky because I always played with the musicians who were better than me. Mm-hmm. And older than me. So I learned a lot. Mm. I do agree that the institution, folk institution in different countries, in Albania, maybe in Hungary too, in Bulgaria, like academic institution that learn folk music. But this is my personal opinion. The best thing to learn, not just the music, but the best thing to learn anything you want, it's be in the field. Yes. Even you don't know nothing, just be there. And when I teach my students in high school and in a university, I always take this as an example. My daughter, when she started growing up, she wants to swim. And I said, Dad, can you teach me how to swim? I said, of course I will teach you. I just grab her and throw in the pool. Oh, in the pool, you know. Yes, yeah. And of course,
she learned to swim.
She was crying, you know.
Yeah.
I said, she said, don't do that again. I said, okay, I will not do that again. So I throw her again for the second time. And I said, just survive. I don't know. And she started, you have to survive. Sense of her surviving. So I think music, I'm not comparing with the swimming, of course, mm-hmm. but you have to be in the wedding, you have to be in the concert, you have to be in those different conditions, like to play accordion when it's like minus, let's say, minus 2 Celsius, or when it's hot, 100 degree, or... in different situations, you have to play in the village, you have to play in the city, you have to play in the Carnegie Hall. You have to play, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
You have to build that experience in order, because it's different when you read. And I'm not saying that you should not go to a school. Of course, you have to go to a school and read and write. But the best of the best is if you experience on your own. That's the best. So I was lucky to have that.
Yeah. Raif, is there still activity going on, quote unquote, in the field, in terms of, are there still village musicians playing and in cities that, you know, came up there, were born there, and maybe even a part of musical dynasties, family heritage, that they're still playing weddings and parties, or is that slowly and quickly dying out?
No, fortunately, there are still, and there are great fanatics of that, because they keep it. They try to keep, because as you know, as a humans always they look for something that they never experienced in their life. In this case, try to be more modernized with the technology and contemporary chords and instruments and stuff like that. After they did try that, they said, "Oh, this is it. Let's go back to our roots." So you have, as I said, the young generation that trying to, even if you see on YouTube and different Albanian TV station, there are more and more, you know, like young generation that are trying to keep, you know, they want to be themselves.
Yeah.
They want to be identified. Even those world top pop singers like Dua Lipa and Rita Ora, they always, when they go back to Kosovo or Albania, that even they admit on different interviews on different world TVs that they are Albanians, and they are very happy when they start dancing Albanian dances.
Mm-hmm.
Even so, somehow they are attached to that folk music, and that's the way it should be for all.
One last question on this: are there, you know, in Hungary and in Transylvania, we have Gypsy or, you know, Roma musical dynasties that really are the ones that kept or continue to keep music alive in certain villages and certain regions. Is that something that we see in Albanian music as well, or is it's not necessarily a Roma tradition in terms of the string music?
Well, as you know, Roma exists all around the world, and including Kosovo and Albania, and there are still Roma musicians. And as I said, the modernization of the life of being much more up to date, somehow, even their contribution and their ability as a great musician start to decay little by little, because as I said, you cannot make a difference between a Roma musician from Albania or Kosovo and Bulgaria and Romania or Macedonia, because all of them are the same. It's like kind of genre. Mm-hmm. It's like kind of style that, unless you don't know personally who is who, if you just listen, you will say, they're just the same group from different regions, stylistically, musically, rhythmically, and everything. So
interesting. Okay, that's interesting. So
yeah,
we talked about getting into the weeds in the certain villages or regions that's not necessarily something that's being picked up through the Roma tradition. The Roma tradition is actually, at least in the Balkans, is something kind of on its own, and that's the beauty of it, the unique sound that they have. So Raif, I wanted to take you back to you're living in New Jersey now, and you've been there for 25 years now, my goodness. But but the first time you were there in 1989 with your boy band, what was that like, man? I mean, you guys are coming from the grips of Yugoslavia, not a great time to be an Albanian living in Kosovo, and you come to New Jersey. How was your reception? What did you guys do every day? What was life like back then as a 20, 21-year-old?
Well, at that time, we were on top of like a list of the singers and groups in Kosovo and in former Yugoslavia, among the population where Albanians live in former Yugoslavia, like in Macedonia, Eastern Serbia, West Serbia, and Montenegro. So, besniket, if you translate besnik, means to be trustful.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Fidelity, that's the name of the group, and we were young, all of us, we were singles, and we came with a working visa, H1, I think, if I don't, I don't forget, and we came with a working visa, with social security, and we worked in North Bergen, in a restaurant. It was a very fancy restaurant owned by five brothers, Albanian brothers. And our job was to play every night music from 9 to 2:30 a.m., mm-hmm. 5 days a week.
Wow.
So that was our job, and we did that for 6 months. And everything was paid. I mean, our trip, they paid our ticket, they paid for our food, and we ate every day in their restaurant. So we were treated like nobles in the sense that,
yeah.
And plus on top of that, we had a salary. And I do remember after 6 months in 1989, I went back with around $15,000 with
me.
Wow. So it was big money in 1989. So anyway, we were so successful, you know. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, cannot get in if you don't make a reservation. There is no question about. Other days, like we used to have off Tuesday and Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
So Mondays, and it's funny because we start learning the lifestyle at that time. Because Mondays, most of the people who will come to listen music, they were either waitress or like a barbers or people who work in saloon,
mm-hmm.
you know, because they work all the weekend. So the off time was, you know, like Mondays or Thursdays, whatever. So anyway, so we played for 6 months, and at that time I could have stayed here, but I didn't want to stay here because in U.S. because I had a wonderful life back in Kosovo.
Mm-hmm.
Except the politics. So I went back with the hope that everything will, you know, like go nice and easy, but actually it went even worse.
Yeah.
At that time I used to work in high school as a music teacher. So one day when Milosevic came in power, in my high school there was like 40, 50 policemen, special forces, the weapons and with everything, you know, like special forces, like SWAT here. And they came inside in my classroom. Not just in my classroom, they came most of the classrooms. And I was teaching, I had like 25, 30 students. And I was scared to death because imagine yourself teaching, let's say, Mozart, and you have like 5, 6, 7 SWAT team coming in your classroom and cursing you and yelling at you, and you know, like, but anyway, so after 6 months, I came back again. My father, not just my father, all the Albanians, they were laid off from their work because they refused to recognize that regime at that time. So the Albanians started getting persecuted just because they were Albanian, and everybody was laid off. There is no work, no institution. You can get in trouble just because you are Albanian. That's it. So the second time I came, I stayed for 1 month, for 1 year. So that's when I met Marita.
Right.
And she was the first singer who came from Albania. Like, this was wow.
Right.
Because nobody can leave Albania during that regime.
Mm-hmm.
So after the fall of Berlin Wall, this era start having impact on Eastern Europe, especially those ex-communist states, including Yugoslavia, Bulgaria, Romania, you know, like Albania.
Right.
So I came a second time and I stayed here. I played in one restaurant in Manhattan, kind of, you know, Italian restaurant owned by Italians. And I played anything I could and I know, you know, like Italian music, some jazz, some classical, some folk.
Mm-hmm.
And then Marita came and we started working together mm-hmm. for 3 months. Then she went back to Albania because her father passed away. I stayed here a couple more months. And I went back again in Kosovo. And I got beaten by police because I was in Albania visiting Marita. So,
jeez. Wow.
Yeah. So then I escaped from Kosovo, went into Albania, and then from Albania we went on tour to Europe. We lived in Germany, we lived in Belgium, in Sweden, Norway, Denmark, Switzerland.
These were all tours that you guys were doing?
Yes, okay. yes. And then after that, in 1995, we decided because the situation in both countries, in Kosovo and Albania, was the worst one. Because in Kosovo, because of the politics, and in Albania, because of the transition from a communist system to a democratic system,
right.
And had a lot of work to do on that. And so we decided to come in the United States in 1995. So we settled in Caldwell, New Jersey, when you visited us a couple of times, and went to the Caldwell College, got my degree at Montclair State University. At that time, we used to play like 5 days a week in Staten Island, Astoria, Queens, you know, like. And the war started in Kosovo in 97. That was the worst thing in my life because for 2 months, I didn't have any contacts with my family. I would be more than happy if I can hear just if they're dead or alive, because I wasn't able to understand are they still alive or they're dead.
Yeah.
You know, in this situation when you are hanged and you're just waiting. That was the worst time in my life. So anyway, then after war, we went back every year back in Kosovo for the concerts and different occasions, and in Albania as well. So yeah, here we are.
And your family more or less has moved to New Jersey as well, right?
Yes. Well, I had my sister. She came during the war, and my brother too. My neighbors,
mm-hmm.
That's my closest family, but I have kind of, second generation cousins in Brooklyn. And
mm-hmm. So they're all there.
Yeah.
Right. The situation surely has improved in the last, decade or two. Do you guys ever think about potentially moving back to either Albania or Kosovo, because I can see, a lot of people are expatting back to Europe, my family included. I'm wondering if that's something you guys have discussed and thought about.
Well, that's a great question, Coleman. And I know the lifestyle in Europe and especially in Balkans is different. It's absolutely different. If you compare with the U.S. and Canada. But I'm 100% sure we did talk privately, me and you. I would have a wonderful life if I lived there after the war in Albania.
Yeah.
Because of our reputation that we built, not just for 1 week, but for the entire life and our personality, how we treat people, how much we respect people and we treat them the best we can. But we were, after the war, it was like kind of, we had a discussion with Marita and kids, what we will do, what we will do.
Yeah.
Should we go back or should we stay here? But thank God, being in United States, it gives you the best opportunities that you can get if you work hard, of course, and if you're smart. And thank God we have three daughters, and thank God they're working very hard.
Yeah.
You know, and like Maggie, she's a vice principal. Angie, she wants to get her dental. She wants to become a dentist. And yeah. Rhea, she's still senior high school. And we didn't want to interrupt their lives, their future, just because of me and Marita.
Yeah.
So somehow we kind of said, you know what, it's better for us if we sacrifice here for them instead of just going back. I don't know, maybe it will be even better if we went back. Nobody knows. Mm-hmm. But, you know, like as a parent, you always think the best for your kid. And I think we did, that's the decision that we made it by staying here, even though we did refuse a lot of work traveling just because we want to be with our kids. Mm-hmm. But hopefully they will be able to achieve what they want, and that will what will make us happy.
Yeah, well, so, that's, you know, as I mentioned at the introduction, from the, you know, former Yugoslav and Balkan area, it's not unique to have some of the top musicians from those countries now living in the West, you know. It's just they came out during a bad time. And they ended up staying because it's a good life you can build here. And I wanted to add on top of that, you've done something. You've really ingrained yourself, obviously, within the culture of the New York, in New Jersey area, folk music scene. You're doing something very interesting at Montclair State University, and that is you've put together one of the only unique thing types of this band of a setup. It's called the Albanian American, I think, Orchestra or something. Why don't you tell us what you're doing with these regular, more or less American university students? Because there's some of this going on at the UCLA and Berkeley and Boston, but this is quite unique as well. What you're doing? Tell me about that.
Well, thank you, Coleman. I did my master's in Montclair State University, and while I did that master's, I saw this, it's a big gap. You know, I was talking to some students, and I saw this big gap. Montclair State University is a great university, of course, and that has a great music program. You know, they have a jazz program, classical music and performance and education and music therapy. So then my mentor at that time, Dr. Di Lorenzo, who is a chief department for the master's studies in music education, I asked her, let's do something different, because I see students, they have this opportunity to learn and study and perform jazz and classical music and other instruments and singing, but there is a little bit different difference. The part of the world that people think, different way of expressing their feelings through the music. And she said, can I hear from you? So I explained it to her. Mm-hmm. So she did propose to the Senate of the university. So that's how it started. In the beginning, I had just four students.
And what was it? Was it a Balkan orchestra or Albanian?
No, it was an Albanian Balkan ensemble. Mm-hmm. And in the beginning, I had like four students, and then the students, they start talking to each other, and oh, this is cool. This is something totally different. This is where I fit. This is what I feel. Because in classic music, you stare at the music in front of the music stand, and you are not able to do this. And you know how is the folk music, Balkan music, gives you flexibility, you know?
Yeah. Yes, absolutely.
So they started coming in, and the biggest ensemble I had was like 26 members. Mm-hmm. So far. And there are wonderful singers and different instruments that they play. Like, for example, can you imagine a bassoon playing Hungarian music or Albanian music,
cool.
Or tuba or trombone. Yes. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
That are not related to the traditional folk music and Hungarian music, you know.
Yes.
So I had all these different instruments, and that's how I started that. And I teach them. My goal with this course was to introduce to them that there is not just jazz music and classic music in this world. There is different music, different styles. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
So actually, and after that, after the end of the course, the semester, they are asked to write the evaluation about the teachers, about their professors. So I read those and made me happy that I discover on them that they were, after taking this course, they felt even different humans in the positive sense.
Mm-hmm.
They felt much more warmer. They felt much more outgoing, much more... had this ensemble, this class had impacted them to think differently, not just in a square box, you know. And as a result of that, last year I brought my ensemble, 17 of them, in Kosovo and Macedonia, and I was lucky because the dean of the university, he granted us like about $20,000
funding
tickets.
Yeah.
Funding, yeah. Dr. Gurskis. So we were so happy. And I have my friends in Kosovo and Macedonia. I said, well, I'm bringing my ensemble, but I don't want them to pay even a penny. I said, don't worry. You have a hotel, you have a breakfast, lunch, dinner. And you have your special, your personal bus for all of you, and you want to come. I said, let's go. So we went there for 1 week, and we did perform in Pristina, at University of Pristina, in the university where I study. Then I took them in Skopje, in Macedonia. So they had chance to perform, and in Ferizaj, another city. Actually, we did celebrate the 4th of July in Kosovo. That was the purpose, to go in there.
Mm.
And of course, they sing, and I did arrange some American patriotic songs.
Nice.
For the band, and we played American music as well as Albanian music. But the funny story, I have to share this with you. I cannot share this story with you, is that when we came back from Pristina to Austria, in Vienna, to Vienna,
mm-hmm.
And one of my students says, Raif, this guy from the airlines, he wants to talk to you. I said, what's the problem? He asked me, he said, okay, can I ask you a question? I said, of course, yes. So we have this situation that we are overbooked.
Hmm.
I said, yes, and what can I do for you? He said, if you want to stay in Vienna, you are more than welcome. We will pay for the hotel and, for the food, just to give up your seat for somebody to travel today,
Mm-hmm.
I said, that's all? He said, well, I said, no, I want something more.
Yes.
He said, okay. He said, let me talk to the manager. So he came back and he says, you know what? You have a free hotel and a food, and we give you each of you 600 euros. I said, that's what I want.
So this is for all of you guys?
Yeah.
Wow. You should have given it back to the dean of the university. That's crazy.
No, I asked my students, who wants to stay in Vienna? But most of them, they maybe never went in Europe. Most of them, they never had passports.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
And on the way back, they got 600 euros, which is equivalent to about 700 euros.
Yeah,
$700.
Yeah. And the free overnight in Vienna. That's great.
Of course, yeah. So I was so happy for my students. Well, I didn't stay because I had a couple more students to come with them.
Right.
Back. But several of them, like six of them, they stayed and they did enjoy and they said, we have to go back again in Kosovo because everything is free. Ticket is free, hotel is free, and plus we have money back. You know?
Yes, yes, exactly. Yes. Raif, you know, speaking of money, and by the way, I just wanted to say that and you also took these guys to the Golden Festival, the Zlatna Usta Golden Festival, I think, right?
Uh-huh.
1 year.
Yeah.
And
yes.
I'm sure their head spun and fell off in the surprise of how amazing that is. But I love this idea. And I think, you know, this is something that should be done. It's similar to the Tamburitsyn's experience, although much more limited level. But I think it's great what you're doing. And I love the fact that you didn't that you took them over to Europe. I actually didn't know that you guys did a trip over there with the group. That's fantastic.
I take them every possible. I took them in Golden Festival every year. I took them to the Albanian biggest festival in Bronx.
Nice.
I took them in national TVs and radios, and you know, I want them to experience that life. So it's better instead of just being in the classroom and talking.
Yeah, no, it's amazing. So yeah, I wanted to talk to you a bit about my experience playing with you and watching you, and I will quote Steve Katansky. Our good friend and one of the prior subjects for the interview that I do here, he said, Uchi, that's me, he said, I've never seen or heard anything like Raif before. And that's big compliment coming from someone who's been around for a long time, Steve Katansky. And you know, there's a virtuosity and a style to your playing, which I personally love, and I know Steve does, and many of the people, that's why you're so big as you are, but there's a aspect about stage presence and the how you effectively lead a group, and you're so easy to follow, and the smile that you have, tell me about that smile. is that coming from within? Because I've asked some other performers, I'm very always surprised to the with the answers I get. True authentic happiness all the time, or something you do for stage?
Well, it's just me. It's not that I'm doing for stage. It's just me. I mean, I cannot imagine anybody in the world like you, because you have a similar smile. I never saw you with a unhappy face playing violin. Can you imagine Kalman Majar or Raif or anybody else with a cranky face on stage? That doesn't go, you know, like it's it doesn't fit in you know, in music vocabulary, or just it doesn't fit. But I want to go and publicly thank Stephen Katansky and Susan Katansky that they talked about you and your father, how great musician and human beings are. And he told me about you. You have to meet Kalman. You have to meet Kalman. Mm-hmm. Actually, the first time we met, I think it was at Steve's and Susan Katansky's house in Valley Cottage.
Yes.
If I'm not wrong. Yes.
Probably. Yeah.
So, yeah. And absolutely, they were 100% right what they said, of course, because I consider you like my part of my family, not just as a colleague or, you know, like a musician, but I'm happy about that. Thank you, Steve.
Me too.
Thank you, Susie.
Thank you, Steve. Thank you, Steve and Susie as well. Yes.
Yes, of course. So yeah, the smile has just come from the bottom of my heart. I cannot. The problem with me is that I cannot smile fake.
That's your problem. That's a problem. Yeah.
That's it.
Right.
Yeah.
That the comment I think leads me to the last clip I wanted to play. I had the luck to be invited by you. What year was this recorded, Raif? The CD maybe 2005, something like that.
Yeah, around that time.
Yeah.
Yes.
So there was a couple of tracks that went pretty big. that Marita sings on and Raif recorded, and he put together a really nice group of people, including myself on viola and violin, and Yuri
yes.
Yunakov, Michael Yuri
yes.
played the saxophone,
saxophone
yeah,
yes.
And some other and you know Raif's regular Albanian band. This is my little viola solo in the beginning, and then we'll hear a few seconds of it. I can't play too much of it for copyright reasons, but oops, here it goes. Let's see here.
I give you the right to play anything you want. Don't worry.
Thank you.
I know.
Here it is. I don't think it's Albanian ornamentation, but that's okay. Nice reverb, by the way.
Yes.
A nice arrangement.
Okay. Yes.
Let's listen to a few seconds of Marita.
Yes.
There you go. So that's a track that we played together. And Raif, you have a new CD, and this is it's called 24, right?
Yes. So Raif Husseini 24. Yeah.
Pardon?
Yeah, Raif Husseini 24. Yeah.
It's so funny because I'm rewatching 24, the show. You know, do you know that show with Kiefer Sutherland and the old show, right? And I'm in season one. I watched it a long time ago, but in season one, it's all about Kosovo. You know that?
And, oh, really?
Yeah, this guy, Viktor Drazen, and he was Milosevic's henchman, they say. And he,
wow.
So it's so funny. And here we are. I was watching it last night, and I'm like, man, I got to tell Raif, you guys, this whole thing comes full circle. Tell me about the new CD. I know I'm not on it, unfortunately. That's probably because of COVID and the distance and everything. But,
yes, yes.
I think it looks fantastic. And tell us where people might be able to get it.
Well, I hope within 2 weeks I will announce on the Facebook my profile that I will have a Zoom event release party, if you can say
nice,
it.
Nice, nice.
And it has like 20 in that CD. Plays features 28 musicians and 15 tunes, my original tunes that I composed and arranged, and it has like about 1 hour and 20 minute music. So of course I miss you very badly, very very badly, but
yeah, same.
I promise you that, and I hope and I pray that this COVID will go as soon as possible.
Me
I hope
too.
Tomorrow
yes.
It's dead.
Yeah.
I hope COVID to get the cancer.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, that would do it. That would do it.
Yeah. And we will play and we will record as much as we can. And this is
28 musicians. This is all various yes. various genres, from folk to jazz and all that.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Yes. Folk music, jazz music. I have a tango. I have a different styles and musicians that we play together with you.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's why I feel so bad that you are not on this because in this one it's Paul Brown, Matt Moran.
Oh boy.
Mel Stein.
Yeah.
Jerry Kisslinger.
Oh, happy birthday, Jerry! By the way.
Yes, happy birthday. Yeah, happy birthday, Jerry. Jessica Tansky. Sarah Alden,
nice.
Paulie Tabia Ferber,
yeah,
awesome. These are great musicians,
and
Yuri Yunakov,
yeah.
And I have my friends who I constantly play, and some other guests.
Mm-hmm.
I have an incredible cello player, Dave Eager. He's amazing cello player,
yeah.
And Taulian Clementi, jazz guitar player, and I have all these different very good musicians.
Yeah.
And I'm very happy with them, and hopefully,
That's amazing.
The last word, the last evaluation are the people who will listen to this CD. It's not me.
Yeah. So Raif, you're going to have a Zoom release party. I will help release that as well. And then it's going to be available, you know, on whatever digital...
On website, yes. Yeah. Okay. I will send you all the information.
Good. That's very exciting. There's one tradition, and I want to close on this, that I really love about the Albanian parties that I've been to and played at, which is the money. No one knows this. I couldn't believe it. And Hungarians, at Táncház, there's no tipping, there's none of that. Maybe at a restaurant or something, but what happens with you guys is out of control. So like, people are literally just throwing wads of money at bands and on the dance floor. And that's how you go home with $15,000 in 1989, right? Like, it's not your salary. It's the tips.
No, it was my salary and tips. But in general, Albanians are very generous.
Very generous, honestly, with so little. Like, honestly, that's crazy to me, you know? Like, it's an amazing culture to me, the generosity that I've experienced with relatively little richness, you know, financially.
Exactly. Yes. Well, in our tradition, we say that the way how we came in this world naked, we're going to go back to that world.
True.
So everything, I mean, even if you are rich, even if you have a power, God gave you that richness, or you worked hard, doesn't belong just to you. You have to share that money that you get. You have to share with others.
Yeah.
You have to share your power, that you become a president or president of company or country. You have to share that power with the rest of the people. Yeah. You're not taking advantage for that. So in general, Albanians, when it comes in general, they're very generous, especially when they have a good music and, you know, like, you know, because we had chance to play together, and
yeah.
I wish I could have more chance to play with you. But I want to share one story, what happened to me accidentally in the bar in Manhattan, one bar. You know, I went there, and in downtown First Avenue 60th Street, I think. There was a lounge bar where you can smoke. You know that I smoke, you know.
Yeah.
So I went there, and I was waiting for a friend of mine to come to meet me there. And she came. In the meantime, another guy, Albanian guy, he came with his girlfriend and his brother and his wife. And, oh, Raif, how are you? It's so great to see you, this and that. And there was a live band, like a drum set, drummer, double bass, and guitar. They were playing jazz music. I love.
Uh-huh.
You know? And I said, this friend that he knows me, who came with his brother and girlfriend and his sister, he says, Raif, this is great music, but you know what? I wish they could play some Albanian music. I said, don't bother, because they're such a wonderful musician. They play jazz music.
Yeah.
But he loves music. I said, really, you want to hear some Albanian music? He says, yes. I said, okay. So they took a break, you know, those musicians.
Right.
And I called the guitar player. And, you know, when you do the guitar, it's E, B, G, D, A, E.
Yes.
So there's a, like, chiftali, like two string instruments. When you play a guitar on the B, and it sounds like chiftali, like two strings. So
okay.
I wrote the Rugova tune for him.
Oh, you wrote it down. Okay.
Yeah, and bass player, I wrote the bass line, and the drummer, I gave him a pattern how he should play.
Yeah.
So then I said, you will play this tune when I ask you to play. And I said, okay. So now I'm going to ask my friend. I said, do you want to hear some Albanian music? He said, but they don't know. said, okay, guys, do you know any Albanian tune? He said, yes, we know Rugova. So they start playing Rugova. And you see his face. He was so happy, man.
Yeah.
And he calls the waiter, can I have $100 singles, please? He said, we don't care singles. He said, go find somewhere. I want to tip them. So he start tipping them $100, $100, $100.
Wow.
And they kept playing Rugova over and over and over. So the manager comes in and he said, guys, can you play some jazz? He said, no, no, that's fine. We'll play later jazz. No, just quick.
Yeah, the money's flowing. Don't mess us up.
So I start tipping them too, you know?
Yeah, yeah. Oh, that's great. Raif, there's so many great stories and great times, and I want to challenge everybody out there. You know, now next Albanian you meet, you say, I know Raif Hizaini, and you might get a free pizza in New York.
Yeah, like,
in New York,
like
it works.
Kutansky.
Yeah, on 82nd Street. Yeah, the pizza place on 82nd Street. They'll give you a free pizza if you know Raif, and if you know Merita, you know, you might get a whole free entree. Who knows? But Raif, we are gonna out of time. I'm gonna let you go, and I really, really appreciate your time and your friendship and all the lessons we learned and the insights we got from you today.
Well, dear brother, one more time, Kesenem, Sapen, Mekvishat. I hope I pronounced it.
Mekivasht. Mekivasht. Thank you. Thank you. Give my love to the whole family. And
yeah, on to you and Trixie.
Thank you very much. And on behalf of myself, Kamal Mojor, and Raif Hizaini, and Tansas Talk, thank you for tuning in, and see you next time.